The connection follows.
Major funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In D.C., as elsewhere, knowledge is power. The lack of information can be debilitating. And if the Bush administration was tight-lipped before September 11th, since the attacks, the White House has pursued such secrecy that legislators on both sides of the aisle are getting riled. Last fall, law enforcement agencies detained scores of people. The administration approved secret military tribunals and established what's been called a shadow government. Meanwhile, departments received new instructions to keep information classified, government websites removed sensitive material, and legislative committees encountered new roadblocks. Such measures, the administration explained, were essential for the war on terrorism, and they were largely accepted by the public. Now, 6 months later, many lawmakers are insisting on more information, decrying the new culture of confidentiality. Connection listeners, is the current power struggle between the executive and legislative branches a natural consequence of wartime? Is the United States at war? Is it enough to justify a shift in the balance of power? And is the White House secrecy anathema to or essential for democracy? Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guest this hour, joining me from Washington, rather from a studio in Nashville, Tennessee, John McGinnis, is a professor at the Cardozo School of Law and former Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Reagan and Bush administrations. I'm also joined from the WHRO studio at the Daily Press in Newport News, Virginia, by Mike Gerhardt. He's a professor at the William and Mary School of Law and a former consultant to the White House Counsel's Office in the Clinton administration. And we'll start off with someone in the thick of the battle in Washington. Republican Congressman Ernest Istook is a member of the House Appropriations Committee and has been dueling with the White House in an attempt to obtain information from Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge. Congressman Istook, you had some pointed words with Budget Director Mitch Daniels last week. Are you making any progress?
Well, first, I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it. I would not characterize things as dueling. I had a very cordial conversation yesterday with Tom Ridge, the Director of the Office of Homeland Security, concerning this circumstance. The tensions, I heard your setup, and I think the tensions are some of the consequence of natural concerns in a time of great stress and a war against terrorism, that you have to find the balance between the executive branch's desire to make things secure and protect the nation, and the legislative branch, which shares those desires, but also understands that it is a proper partner in all things involving national security. Under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the Congress is expressly charged to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Now, that's Homeland Security. It's part of the very first enumeration of powers of the legislative branch, which has a lot of other enumerated powers that relate to this. The challenge here is coming from the fact that a person has been asked to wear multiple hats. Tom Ridge has been designated both an advisor to the president and as director of the Office of Homeland Security, which has a lot of responsibilities that require coordination with Congress. And you cannot change the nature of the obligation to coordinate with Congress just by saying that in addition to everything else, someone also is deemed to be an advisor to the president. It's the substance, not the form, that I think we need to look at.
Okay, so you said you had a chance to talk with Tom Ridge on the telephone yesterday. Is that the type of access to information that you're looking for? Does it need to be done in a more public way?
Well, I think that you have to have both formal and informal communications. The concern has been having Governor Ridge not only talk with me, but to discuss matters with the members of Congress that have responsibility for it. For example, my Appropriations Subcommittee is in charge of funding for the Office of Homeland Security. It's also in charge of funding for the White House, for a great amount of the border security that comes through the Customs Service, for example. we have a lot of specific responsibilities. And with the new grants of authority, and there's a number of them, grants of actual authority to the Office of Homeland Security, there's a serious question not only about coordinating, but making sure that we're not duplicating the funding or the functions in multiple places around the government within a Homeland Security budget that we're told should be in the range of $38 billion. You can't get rid of overlap and duplication and make sure things are working right unless you let all the members of Congress involved have free, unfettered access to the relevant information, both in public settings and in private and secure settings when necessary.
You'll know that Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle has suggested that if there's no other way to get Tom Ridge before Congress, a subpoena might be an option. Do you share that view?
I'm trying to work things out without resort to any such effort.
If you subpoenaed him, would he have to appear? How does that work?
Well, I'm not even going to get involved in conjecture about you because I'm not working that route.
You think that you're going to be able to do this without that sort of level of confrontation?
I think I've told you that we're trying to find a structure that will satisfy accountability and the legitimate information needs of Congress for its shared responsibility that it shares with the executive branch regarding Homeland Security.
John McGinnis at the Cardozo School of Law. You've been watching what's happening in Washington. Your thoughts on this push-pull for information that we're talking about?
Well, there are a variety of requests here for information. I think it's important to break those down. One concern, of course, is national security information, and the president needs to keep that confidential, particularly in times of terrorism. But also the president is trying to make a push to keep the deliberations of the executive branch more confidential than in previous administrations. And I think the president has a point in this. So just as the Congress can't require a Supreme Court law clerks to disclose their discussions with the justices, so the president needs to have a free and unfettered discussion with people who are advising him without that information and deliberations going to Congress. Congress can critique the output of the executive branch, but I don't think it deserves on a daily basis the internal deliberations. Finally, we come to the question of Governor Ridge and his possible testimony before Congress. The White House has long taken the position that people who are not confirmed by the Senate and essentially act in advisory roles don't go before Congress. So the chief of staff of the White House has enormous coordination powers that probably dwarf those of the Director of Homeland Security, and yet the Chief of Staff never testifies before Congress. All of the statutory officials who carry out statutory responsibilities, like the secretaries within the Cabinet, can be directed and can give a testimony to Congress, and Congress can get information in that way, and I don't really see the essential need to get it from Tom Ridge himself.
Mike Gerhart, getting a little bit of an echo on the line. Can we get rid of that? Try and get that sorted out. Mike, just hang on while we do that. Congressman, I mean, in one sense, one of the things that it seems that we need to do in order to figure out a way ahead is whether or not the United States is in fact at war or is in fact, facing a war on terror. Is that different from the types of war that we've known before?
Well, that may have both differences and things alike with what we've known before, but I really don't think that has direct relationship with deciding what sort of testimony should be provided and received. And if you read the executive order, which I have certainly done and recounted part of this in a hearing last week, the executive order, one place in a six-page, single-spaced document, one place it mentions that part of the role of the Office of Homeland Security is to function as an advisor to the president. The rest of those six pages of single-spaced grants of authority talk about a lot of other duties, and it's the sharing of duties. If someone were strictly functioning as a presidential advisor, I don't think we'd be having this discussion. But, for example, The same person is given the responsibility of prioritizing our requirements for foreign intelligence relating to terrorism, to coordinate domestic exercises and simulations, coordinating programs and activities to train federal, state, and local employees, to ensure readiness and coordinated deployment of federal response teams.
Can I get back,
and so forth in a great amount of detail.
I want to, though, try and figure out for those of us who live outside the Beltway whether or not the circumstances that we're talking about right now in America are such that the normal give and take between the executive and the legislative branch needs to be, you know, questioned insofar as John McGinnis made the point, this is a country in a time of terror. Does that mean things are different now?
Well, obviously things are different, but if you look at the Constitution on who is in charge of deciding how we handle those differences, I think some people read the part of the Constitution that specifies the president is commander-in-chief, and they stop there. If you look in the Constitution, there is a lot more express delegation of responsibility to the Congress to deal with national emergencies than there is to the president. I mentioned first providing for the common defense and general welfare. Also, Congress is given the responsibility to, quote, define and punish offenses against the law of nations, that includes international terrorism, to provide for calling forth the militia. We're talking about internal emergency situations there, to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. I mean, these are just part of the responsibilities where Congress has a constitutional duty here, and we cannot shirk that. There is nothing in the Constitution that says when it comes to issues of national defense or homeland security that the president is the only one that is in charge of those issues,
but the president
or the only one in charge of the information.
The president has said a couple of times, though, that at this time, his administration, they think it's time to actually draw a line and say, you know, the executive branch is not going to cede that amount of territory that has been ceded in the past to the legislators.
Maybe you didn't hear what I said. We're not talking about ceding or giving up any authority. We're talking about following the Constitution with what it expressly enumerates are the responsibilities of the Congress.
And is the president then following the Constitution, in your view?
All of us are seeking to follow the Constitution, but
it is
people,
an interpretive document.
No, just hear me out. Your other guest made no reference to the Constitution. People can talk about doctrines and interpretations. What I've told you comes directly from the explicit language of the U.S. Constitution. I read it to you. I mean, let's talk about what the Constitution says is the role of Congress concerning the national defense, the general welfare, and the security of our homeland. Why don't we make the debate on those principles? I think we can have a much better discussion that way.
Congressman, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Congressman Ernest Istook, Republican from Oklahoma, member of the House Appropriations Committee. Connection listeners, we're continuing the conversation about the Constitution, about the way that the legislative branch and the executive branch may be trying to establish territory or interpret the document that defines the balance of power in this country. Are you comfortable with the way that it's working out right now? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
This is WBUR.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour we're talking about a conversation in Washington that's going on between the executive and the legislative branch over whether or not the White House is sharing enough information with the legislators in terms of Homeland Security and a number of other areas that the congressmen and senators are trying to get information on. With me on the program today, John McGinnis, who is professor at the Cardozo School of Law. He's currently teaching at Northwestern School of Law. He was a former deputy assistant attorney general in the Reagan and Bush administrations. Mike Gerhardt is also with us. He's a professor of constitutional law at the William & Mary School of Law and himself was a former special consultant to the White House counsel's office in the Clinton administration. Mike, I hope we've got that little echo sorted out on the line. I want to turn to you first, if I can, on the last point of my conversation with Congressman Istook, because my understanding of the Constitution is that it's supposed to have a certain degree of elasticity, a certain degree of interpretation built into it. Am I wrong there?
Well, I know John's going to disagree with you about that, and I think I might take a little bit of issue with you as well. I don't think you need to recognize that there's an elasticity with respect to the interpretation of the Constitution in order to cede the Congressman's point to him. I think the Congressman's point really rests, as he said, on the explicit language of the Constitution that grants to Congress substantial...
Mike, I think we have lost that line. Not a great connection there. We'll try and get that back and pick that up. So, John, can I get you to pick up the same point? Mike suggested you might want to disagree with my notion of interpreting the Constitution.
No, I don't think I would disagree at all. The Constitution needs to be interpreted. The debate about it is how it should be interpreted. We need to interpret it according to its text and original meaning. And, of course, I completely agree with the Congressman that Congress has tremendous legislative responsibilities. On the other hand, the executive power is vested in the President of the United States, and as an incident of that power, the Supreme Court has recognized that he has entitled to keep deliberations within that executive branch confidential, just as the judiciary is able to keep its deliberations confidential before it puts out an opinion, just as members of congressional staff can talk to their representatives without being required by the executive branch to give over information about deliberations within Congress. The separation of powers, which is our bedrock principle, only works when each branch is able to have control over its own house. And that is what the president is trying to do, to try to keep information confidential in his own house so he can get better information, more candid information, and therefore have a better output from the executive branch.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, and we're taking our first call from Beth, who's calling in from Holliston. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I'm calling in response to the congressman from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And how grateful I am that he read that piece of the Constitution, because I think Congress's powers are being usurped right now by the executive branch because we're in a time of fear. And I think it's really important that all members of Congress stand up and say, you know what, this is our responsibility. And we not only have a right, but we have a responsibility to disagree and to say the president, the executive branch, is in error or is making mistakes.
You used, I think, the word, Beth, a time of fear, and John spoke earlier about this being a time of terror. We know the administration has talked about it as, you know, an administration at war. Does trying to figure out exactly what circumstances the country is in right now, is that part of coming to a clear-headed understanding of what the balance of power ought to be?
I think we need to remember that that document was written in a time of fear and confusion, and that the people who wrote it were able to be so clear and at the birth of the nation that I think we ought to be able to take a deep breath and be less fearful. I think fear is we're being manipulated by our concerns.
John McGinnis, can you speak to Beth's suggestion that in fact, the president is usurping power?
I don't think the president is usurping power. Congress still has the entire power to legislate on matters. He's just keeping matters that are confidential. And I would agree that many of these matters about how the president keeps information confidential within the executive branch are a concern, are an issue whether or not we're at war. It's about how do we have the best output from the executive branch. There's no doubt that Congress can call the executive branch to account, can call cabinet officials before them, can get answers, and then can legislate on the basis of that. The question is whether we have a better government and a government that's more consistent with the Constitution if Congress is able to go into every nook and cranny of what is discussed within the executive branch. And I think no structure, no organization functions well when there is no confidentiality. We're just not going to get as good information. And that, I think, is the real heart of the issue here. The Bush administration is trying to reorient after years of really giving out information simply to Congress, trying to make the executive branch a tighter and more effective ship. And I don't think that that is in any way usurping Congress's power.
Mike Gerhardt, are you there with us?
I hope so.
Welcome back. I'm sorry we lost you there. A reorientation is what John's talking about here. Would you use the same phrase yourself or word?
No, I would not. I think that Congress is less interested in finding out about the internal deliberations of the White House than it is about, number one, the information that the White House has about terrorist activities or potential terrorist activities in the United States, and number two, the White House's plans with respect to how to combat those activities. Those are concrete things. They have nothing to do with the internal deliberations of the White House. But, for example, the White House kept secret, even from Congress, its plans with respect to having a secret government in place in case of emergency. Those are the kinds of plans that I think Congress has every right and power to learn about and to respond to if necessary.
Beth, last question to you. Do you think there are some things these days? Oh, she's gone. So we're moving along to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Bob is on the line. Hey, Bob.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm interested in comments regarding the suitability of the Constitution as it was written to handle the kinds of problems that we face today. It seems to me that we've outlived the not the usefulness, but we've outlived the basic tenets of the Constitution. We need to revise it. I hate the thought of a constitutional convention, but it seems to me that that's in order.
What's not working then, Bob?
Well, it seems to me that we have so many different interpretations of the Constitution and the way it should be enacted that it's causing more difficulty than if we kind of revisited it and tied some of the things down.
Mike Gerhardt, do you want to speak first to that?
Well, I think constitutions, certainly ones like our own, are designed to be interpreted. That's an inevitable aspect of the Constitution. I don't think that's a defect in the Constitution. It's just one dimension of it that we have to confront. Beyond that, I think that each branch of the government, the President and Congress, are entitled to interpret that document and try and divine their own powers within it and then to try and implement those powers. Those are the things that I think the President and Congress have done over a course of more than 200 years. I don't think there's anything broken within the Constitution. I think what we're seeing is, in fact, the Constitution in play. That is to say, it's in its operations in a time of, an important time in American history.
John McGinnis, take me back to the time that that you served the Attorney General in the Reagan and Bush administrations, whether or not this was exactly the same sort of conversation that might have been going on in the last days of the Cold War, and whether or not the document that you used as guidance then is every bit as good today or may need some adjustment.
I think there's a tremendous continuity, not only when I was in the administration, but many of these issues of confidentiality between the executive branch and Congress go back to the first Congress. They go back to George Washington and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. These issues are going to be around so long as politicians jockey for power and have different positions within the government. And actually, I think the framework to understand them really has not changed radically. What perhaps has changed over time is the United States' greater responsibilities in the world, but even that, the framers were very well aware that foreign policy and national security was very important, and that's the reason, one of the reasons they gave us a unitary executive that, in the words of the Federalist Papers, could act with secrecy and dispatch. And so I don't think we do need a new constitution. We do have a debate about the principles of the Constitution, of how to interpret it, and I think we can interpret it according to its text and to its original meaning and its historical practice, and come to the right kind of calibration of the powers between the branches.
Bob, thanks for your call. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection from NPR, and this hour we're talking about the debate in Washington over secrecy in the White House, whether or not they're the push and pull for information from the legislative to the executive branch that's currently underway is a good example of democracy working exactly the way it was meant to, or whether or not we're looking at some kind of shift. Mike Gearhart, I was reading a kind of a profile on Bush last night, saying, you know, here's a man who comes from a business background, who places such a high priority on loyalty and discipline and the sort of business ethics that require a certain amount of keeping your cards to yourself until you are forced to show them to someone else. I'm wondering if you can provide a little contrast for us between the Clinton administration in which you served and what you're seeing in the Bush administration now, whether or not there is a genuine reorientation underway.
Well, I think the Clinton administration had a policy of trying to create almost a presumption of releasing information rather than suppressing it, unless there were a good reason to keep it secret. The Bush administration is trying to shift that presumption really more in favor of keeping information secret unless there's a good reason for releasing it. So I think that's where you see the shifting going on. I do think that the president might be mistaken, though, in trying to overemphasize the degree to which he wants the administration to parallel business enterprises, for the very simple reason that we have a system of checks and balances. And in that system of checks and balances, Congress has got a very important role to play with respect to the formulation of policies regarding national security. And he can't ignore that fact.
1-800-423-8255. And to Wellesley, Massachusetts, Ren is joining the program. Hi, Ren.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking the call. There's a borderline issue here that I've been having, and you touched upon it with holding cards to the vest, and I have no problem with the Office of the Presidency doing this in a time when any information gleaned is very often made public instantaneously. But in light of having Americans question what he's doing, and as you opened with Withis or Aguinas seeming to apply to Americans as well as anyone else on the planet, mm-hmm. and you have various Republican supporters tar and feathering congressmen, senators with un-American epithets because they question the presidency, what could the president do to make his office seem like it's less secretive? The process of having Daschle labeled as anti-American and unsupportive of the war effort because he's asking President Bush, what's he doing? It doesn't help the presidency not look secret, not look like we don't want to tell.
Right.
And I would ask the congressman how he might respond to that, and I can take the answer off air.
Thanks for your call, Ren. The congressman has actually left the program, but I'm going to ask John McGinnis to speak to the specific point you made and about whether or not it's also or largely a problem of bad public relations by the president's office.
Well, first of all, I certainly think there is no place to question people's patriotism when they're questioning any sort of part of the war effort, and I do not believe the president or any of his subordinates did that. I think that was another member of Congress doing that, so I don't think that should be laid of the White House. I think it is. The question is it better public relations or is it better sort of congressional relations? Obviously, as you point out, information is power. The Congress would like more information so that it will have more leverage over the executive branch, and it also wants more information, surely because it hopes to use that information in legislating. But that is one aspect that is going on here. So you're never going to make a policy of greater confidentiality precisely because it better organizes the executive branch and gives the president more power rather than have his policies undercut by subordinates. For instance, as you may recall, the president fired someone in his administration for disagreeing publicly with him. That presents a greater unitary executive to Congress and therefore lessens the power of Congress to maneuver. And members of Congress aren't going to like that. So I think it goes beyond a matter of public relations.
And that's not a party issue, as you see it, John?
No. In fact, of course, the framers, one thing that has, the framers didn't really completely recognize the party government. They actually thought the biggest tension in government would be the tension between almost the legislative party and the executive party. And there are these permanent interests created by the offices themselves. And I think that's what we're seeing, the friction here, rather than party friction.
And Mike Gearhart, 80%, is that basically the end of the story?
Well, that's a good bit of the story, I expect. But I would also just hasten to add that my recollection is that the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, in his testimony for Congress, did suggest it would be treacherous for people to criticize the administration's policies in its war against terrorism. Mm-hmm. So I do think the administration has let slip at least that charge. I agree, of course, with John that I think it's an unfortunate slip. And I think we'd be better off to sort of put the debate back on more civil terms in which we recognize that the First Amendment, among other things, protects people's ability to criticize the policies of the government. And at the same time, it's important to have a dialogue in which we are really sort of try to hold the administration accountable, and Congress, too. Hold both Congress and the administration accountable for their policies in this very important war against terrorism.
Connection listeners, Senator Robert Byrd in a recent op-ed piece suggested that we owe it to the men and the women who serve their daughters and sons, husbands, wives, mothers and fathers, to ask the questions, to have the congressman asking the question, to know why and where and what people are fighting for. You can see letters in the newspaper. Here's one from Spring Hill, Florida that says, my advice to those people who would criticize is to support the president and by doing so support the young and brave forces who are fighting the war. 1-800-423-8255. The duty to question, the right to question, the importance of asking the questions. Your thoughts on that. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia9287.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. My name's Dick Gordon. Legislators on Capitol Hill say the White House is not sharing enough information, that it's hard to know where taxpayers' dollars are being spent and whether or not the money's being properly distributed. People in the White House are saying there's a war on, and this is the way things ought to operate, even at the best of times. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Columbia, South Carolina. And Teresia, have I pronounced your name right?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
You're on the air.
I said the power of Congress is the true representative or the better and best representative of the American people. These are 536 minds working for America and representing the American citizenship. The president is only one person. He should be a team worker with the Congress.
You feel that as far as you're concerned, your congressional representative is more looking out for your interests than the president?
Not only my person, but Congress as a whole is a perfect representation of the American people. It's not one man, the president, who was able to get votes.
John McGinnis?
Oh, well, I think the Congress is a representative of the American people, but so is the president. And the Congress has many advantages in having a larger number of people in gathering preferences of the people, perhaps in some sense better than the president. The president has a lot of advantages in being a single person. The framers understood, for instance, that national security could not be run by a committee. That's one of the problems in the Articles of Confederation, that there was not a strong executive that was unitary, where there was an accountability on one individual. And so that's the one of the reasons they created the presidency. And this is a check and balance. And I don't quite entirely agree that there's the emphasis on teamwork between the executive branch and Congress. There's a natural and healthy tension between them. James Madison in Federalist 51 said that the whole point of the separation of powers is for ambition to check ambition. And so I'm not necessarily even unhappy that there's this friction over information. Both the president and the Congress have political tools to get information, and I think they should be both welcome to use them. Congress, if it isn't getting the kind of information it wants, can refuse to confirm members of the executive branch. There can be a give and take there. So I do not think Congress is at all powerless in this struggle.
And when the president says, you know, we're not in a position to share that kind of information because we've been burned by leaks in the past, is that a legitimate stand to take at a time like this?
Well, certainly, I think it is legitimate to point out that Congress has greater difficulty keeping information confidential, and that was well understood by the framers. It is a geometric progression. As you give more information to more people, it's less likely to retain its confidentiality.
Mike Earhart?
Well, certainly Congress has got procedures by which it can maintain the confidentiality of information. That's the first point. And the second is that it seems to me that that is a point of negotiation between the president and Congress. Obviously, he can call upon members of Congress to try and do a better job of maintaining the secrecy of information that he shares with him. But I don't think that that is an adequate ground for the president to refuse to give information to the Congress, both about the plans that the administration has with respect to the war against terrorism, and again with respect to actual information and data regarding potential terrorist activity against the United States.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Teresa, thanks for your call to Greensboro, North Carolina now, and Carol is with us. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
I'm calling because of the fact that I know that we're going to have to economically support this war, and it sort of confuses me that we've been given so little information on what's going on.
What is it that you're looking for, Carol? What do you feel like you're missing, though?
I guess when I hear things like Operation Anaconda is wrapping up and it's a success, and then I hear that, well, we don't have Bin Laden, we don't have any of the military chiefs, I guess my question would be, why?
You know, on the military side, that it's kind of quicksand that you're in terms of how much am I going to be told about this ongoing operation?
Okay, I'll use the example of that it's supposedly costing us $1 billion a month.
Right.
Is it an accurate figure? Is it being expended to support the troops or support agencies like the CIA and the FBI? I mean, where is this money going? And I guess if Bush wants to use a business model to run the government, you don't sell business models by saying to people, and we're not going to tell you what we're selling yet. We're just going to ask you to pay the price. I mean, the government isn't a business model, but he's chosen to operate it this way.
Mike, it sounds like Carol's put her finger on really what is the sticking point when we talk about information, and that is who's controlling the money here.
I think that's a terrific point, and I think Carol actually is asking exactly some of the same questions that members of Congress are asking. In fact, you've heard some members of Congress saying, look, we're not going to give you any more money unless you a better account for how you're using it. That's a perfectly legitimate question for members of Congress to ask. And I don't think the president is on very solid ground when he says, I'm not going to basically explain to you all the different ways in which we're using the money you give to us, because we just don't think you're entitled to have that information.
Yeah, it it would be irrational for me to believe that I would turn my money over to a corporation and them say, we're not going to give you a bit of information of what this costs and what we're doing with it. Just trust us. And I guess, you know, this whole administration has sort of guided the country, rightly or wrongly, whichever you think. This is a business approach. We're doing everything in a business approach. This isn't the way good business is done.
I might also just take the liberty of adding that information is an incredibly important means by which to hold government officials accountable.
If
the government restricts that information, then it basically makes it difficult to hold them accountable for what they're doing.
Well, also to hold the public's interest. And I'm not saying that the public isn't supportive of this war. I'm saying that it's tough to be interested and supportive of something that's being conducted in secrecy. My greatest concern is because there is so much secrecy, even though this war on terrorism will have to go on for years, at some point is the American public just going to say, there's a backlash. We've had enough of this secrecy, and we don't want to support this anymore. You know,
Carol, I'm going to move along to another
call,
and thank you for calling
Bye.
In. 1-800-423-8255. And to Greensboro, North Carolina, Bob's joining us. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for listening. Look, I have a point to make about this thing. This is, to me, strictly a political issue being brought forth by these guys. You have a popular president. They have grabbed onto an issue they think they can make hay out of. They're not so interested in the way they spend our money all throughout peacetime. It's been shown they waste money left and right. Now they have something here they think they can get their claws into. You know, and I support the president fully in wartime. They should do the same thing. And these operations should be in secret. These people have never been in war. You know, these things have to be secret for us to carry out our missions. If we can't support the president in time of war, you know, we're just not being patriotic.
How long does it last, Bob? I mean, if the war on terror extends on into, you know, another country and then another country and it, be, you know, 6 months becomes 12, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, how do you know, how does anyone know whether or not the circumstances have changed to the point where maybe a little more information can be released?
Well, I think we're getting tons of information through the media every day.
Right.
I don't see where, I mean, all the congressmen have to do is turn on the television or listen to public radio.
And you know, that's what bugs them. They're finding out this information by watching television and listening to the radio instead of getting it through the channels that they may have come to expect in Washington.
Well, I understand that. But these guys, in my opinion, you know, they're getting what they need. I'm not so sure they need any more than that. They're awful about leaking this information out for political gain. You know, they've proved so many times in the past that they're not worth getting this secret information, that they can't hold on to it. You know, I don't want these guys endangering our military personnel's lives overseas for political gain, and that happens all the time. I think they're getting all the information they need. I know I'm certainly getting all the information I need.
John McGinnis, it's just politics.
Well, I think it goes, I don't entirely agree with that. I think it goes beyond the politics to Congress's interest in information. I don't agree, though, that president is not given information to Congress. It is in his budget request. He lays out how the money is being used. The Congress can at any point call his cabinet secretaries involved in protecting against terrorism or military operations to ask questions. And so long as those questions don't talk about particular military operations that could endanger people in the field, I think the cabinet secretaries have been and should be forthcoming about how money is being used. I completely agree that Congress has the right to know how money is being used. What I don't agree is that the Congress has the right to all the internal discussions with the executive branch in making its policy formulations. Once the president wants something from Congress, wants money from Congress, he has to lay out exactly how it's going to be used, and Congress has every right to demand accountability then for how it is used.
All right, Bob, thanks for your call. To Brian now in Boston. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Yeah, you're there.
Thanks for taking my call. I basically just wanted to add a quick point in that I agree with one of your previous callers. saying that it's sometimes really hard for Congress to maintain a level of secrecy. There are so many members, and they're being distracted by so many interest groups and other parties
right.
that the dissemination of information is inevitable. But I think to a certain degree the accountability factor has to be there, whereby perhaps there's a middle ground. Maybe the executive branch has a certain time limit to keep, say, non-military, non-black op type of secrets before they have to give it to Congress. And then eventually it gets down to the public where the tax dollars are inevitably coming from.
But if we're talking about something like doubling the budget for Homeland Security up to $38 billion and Congress saying, you know, we'd really kind of like to know what that money's being spent on, do you want to, you know, stall the detail on that?
No. I think that... I'm saying with certain issues that the executive branch claims to be sensitive,
right?
Only that should have a time limit. Everything else should get, you know, should get passed on to Congress immediately,
right.
I think. But if they're claiming that it's sensitive and that it's, you know, a military operation or something that we don't want, for example, terrorists to know about how we're trying to prevent their entry into the country, fine, so be it. Let them put it in place, and then they can tell us how they went about it and where the dollars went.
Okay, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. Let's see if we can look at a little bit of a wrap-up here. First to Mike Gerhardt. I mean, in one sense, Mike, the Congress has power. Congress can delay the pace of a review of a defense bill and make life very uncomfortable for the executive. And the executive always knows that, right?
That's correct. Congress does know that. But at the same time, Congress is trying, obviously, to the fullest extent possible to support this war against terrorism. I think it's completely wrong to think that it's unpatriotic for Congress to insist that the president respect the Constitution. Beyond that, I think the members of Congress are doing their sort of patriotic duty in supporting the war. But there is a point beyond which I believe it. Congress doesn't want the president to go too far. Congress obviously wants the president to share with them information about the plans it's already gotten in place in the war against terrorism and the information it's got in place about terrorist activity in the United States and perhaps abroad. That information is well within Congress's authority to hear and then to perhaps act upon.
John McGinnis, you're saying, in fact, what we're watching in Washington is things working sort of the way they're supposed to work.
That's my view. There's always a give and take, an ebb and flow between the different branches of power. And this president, with I agree with a business background, is thinking about how best to get the output from the executive branch. And he thinks there's a greater degree of confidentiality for deliberations. But that doesn't mean we have a government of secrecy. The Congress can call all of his cabinet secretaries to account and through the media criticize them, and they have a lot of other levers with which to get information.
Thanks to both of you. John McGinnis, professor at the Cardozo School of Law, Mike Gerhardt, professor of constitutional law at William & Mary School of Law. And a little earlier in the program, we talked with Republican Congressman Ernest Histook. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping